Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Yes, we do. My name is Lana Nuchtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here. We get together here once a week at KHOI Community Radio. And we talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. Yes, we do.
Weather.
And weather.
Boy,
oh, my
weather.
Gosh. Oof. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Well, we thank them, and we thank you, our listener, for being with us. The Donalana Kitchen talks about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. Yes, we do. And we talk about what's going on outside of our kitchen window. We have had a soggy June, but I guess a soggy June isn't all that uncommon.
Yeah, and we're getting a good crop of mosquitoes.
Oh, yes, yes. I don't think it is very unusual because in my ever handy pagan book of days, I kind of looked up the month of June, and it says, well, good weather is a good thing in June, but there's all sorts of allusions to rain and deluges. It says if it rains on the 27th of June, then it will rain for the next 7 weeks. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. A wet June makes a dry September, and a dripping June brings all things in tune. Oh, my goodness. See, people have been watching the weather for a long time. And if in
all I know is it makes it really green.
Mosquito-y. Uh-huh. And if mid-June is St. Vitus's Day. And here's a little poem. If St. Vitus Day be rainy weather, it will rain for 30 days together. So I guess we're in for some more. Water is high. Fields have got plenty of rain.
Yeah, it was both Lon and I went to a wedding up near Charles City this weekend. And so driving into this sort of north central part of the state, there's all these little rather large puddles in cornfields. It's quite a little change in the scenery.
Yes, we've had enough. Thank you. So I hope you're having a good June. Today we are going to be talking about, seafood of all things, and summer fruit. Donna's been having some good times with seafood. Now, seafood is not really an Iowa thing.
No. This is, in fact, I very rarely eat seafood because, except for the bluegill and the walleye and, a few.
Lake food.
Right. And any seafood that you're going to eat in Iowa has traveled a long way.
But it is really good. So what have you got for us today, Donna?
Well, I regularly read Savour magazine. That's spelled S-A-V-E-U-R. And it is, it's a food magazine, and they have some recipes, but it's more about food and where it comes from. And this issue was called The Oceans and Island Issues. And some of the articles are The Tastes of the Sea, Hunting for Urchins in Sonoma, and then Italy's Beloved Anchovies, and The Famous Mussels of France, and then Seafood Skills, Mastering Ceviche, a Middle Eastern Fish Fry, and Cooking Oysters at Home. Oh. So there's been, I kind of stuck myself into the magazine, and it did inspire me to do a few things. One of the things it talked about was dried fish.
Oh.
Of which, there are many, many kinds. Salt cod being the most famous one, which usually at Christmas I do get some salt cod. But what it did was kind of send me running to our local Asian Unimart, which is on, what street's it on? Lincoln Way, kind of past on the west side of the college or something. And I go in there sometimes because it's quite an adventure. Even though most things are slightly labeled in English, I it's always interesting for me to be in a store where I know everything is edible and most of it I don't know how to use. Without a guide, it's a little, they do have, I mean, and it's, they have Korean food, they have Chinese food, they have Japanese things. And of course, I hardly know the differences. So the one thing I always go and buy there is my yuzu jam, because that's, it's an Asian lemon-like fruit. And I do use the yuzu marmalade in a lot of desserts and cakes and even sorbets and things like that. So I once in a while I'll go there and buy a big jam. Now, it's not called yuzu jam there. You have to know it's called citron or citrus tea or something. And that's because in Korea, which is probably where this is coming from, they take a big spoon of it and they just mix it in hot water. And I'm sure it's delicious, but it has lots and lots of other uses. So I went and started looking at the fish.
Fish.
Yeah. Now, a lot of the dried fish is coming from, I suppose, China or Korea. They are dried with sugar, salt, and MSG. So I was kind of like not... I didn't buy a whole bunch of them. However, I looked in the freezer department.
Ooh.
Because they have, the first thing I bought were some calamari or squid rings, which I love, and they're very easy to cook. Then they also have whole frozen mackerel, which you really, that is a treat that you have to know how to deal with, and you have to love mackerel.
Is this like with the head on and... And tail and everything?
The head, the tail, and the guts. So you have to thaw them out and gut them.
A good thing to know.
But they're really good on the grill. So.
Well.
I brought something in here. Lana, look at this.
Oh. No. Oh. There is a seafood dish in front of me, which sort of looks like a big, big, big oyster mushroom, a thing spread out. It does. It does a spread out fillet sort of thing, and it's got rays of some ribs in it, sort of. And it looks like capers.
Ray
on top.
Is a key word here. This is a skate wing.
Skate wing?
Skate wing. They're called wings.
So, oh, like a manta ray.
They ray. Skate is related to ray, but it is a different species.
Oh,
but yes, that's what they're like. They're kind of flat with these big, huge fins that they use to travel with, and they have little tails. And so the edible part is the fin, which is called a wing. Oh. So it's a skate wing. Now, they are in the shark family, so it's not technically bones. It's cartilage. And they're very popular. I've had them in France a lot, and it is a delicious fish. So I'm going to – and you don't cook them too long.
Mm-hmm. How did you cook this?
This one, I fried it in butter.
Oh, well then.
It's a very French way of doing it. You just flip them once because the cartilage has the flesh on both sides. So you no more than – I don't know, maybe 4 minutes on a side maximum. Depends on the size of the skate wing. Like this one is probably a good one-person, very generous one-person portion.
Oh,
so
yes.
The typical way that the French do it is they serve it with black butter is basically beurre noir. So you brown the butter till it's quite dark, and then you throw in some capers and some lemons if you like, and then you pour it over the fish. After, of course, it's already been sautéed in butter, you can roast them in the oven. You can do a low fat. It doesn't really require fat. It's a very tender fish. So, Lana, what we do, see all these little bones that like, well, no, they're not bones. They're cartilage, which makes up the shape of the wing. See how you take your fork and you scrape it off. Now taste it.
It's like, think of a fan.
Yes.
Here we go. I'm going to taste this now.
Yeah, it's very mild. Isn't that delicious?
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So you just scrape one side off, then you flip it over, and there's more flesh on the other side.
Oh, and what is left is definitely a fan of cartilage.
And so there's nothing on this except the butter, salt and pepper, and then capers, and you could put a little lemon if you want. What do you think of the flavor?
It's wonderful. I love fish. It's lovely. It's lovely.
It's not expensive. So this piece probably cost, I put a lot of pepper on it, sorry. probably cost, I think, about $3.50.
Really?
Yeah.
It's lovely. And you buy this already cut off. You don't have to buy the whole
thing. Oh, yes, thank goodness, because they come with some kind of thick skin that you would want your fishmonger to remove. I mean, I looked it up online. It's doable, but it wasn't something I would want to have to deal with.
Since this is the shark family, we're not talking scales.
It's not shark.
Here.
No, there's no scales.
But it isn't shark.
But see these little thingies? It's all cartilage. And the beauty of it is it's not like you have to pick through for the bones. It comes right off. And they're so obvious that, you know, you're not going to get a fishbone stuck in your throat.
Amazing things that grow in the sea.
Yeah.
And then the skate uses these things to swim with. Oh, yeah, we all see pictures of those.
Isn't it good?
Romantic looking, slow moving flyers through the ocean.
They're bottom feeders.
Delicious. Bottom feeders. Good.
So they kind of live in sort of coastal areas, not too far off. Now, here's the thing. When you buy them at the Asian Unimart.
Unimart, yes.
They don't come with much of a label. So
you're so adventuresome.
You can't. Well, I mean, they're obvious what they are. You can see.
Okay.
But in terms of, are they endangered? Are they overfished? Yeah. We are used to, for example, if you buy fish at Hy-Vee, they have a whole rating system for, how rare is this? Is it okay to eat it? You know, were the fishermen paid a decent wages? It was slave labor? I mean, you know, all of that sort of thing. There are rating systems. So I looked up skate on the Monterey Bay Aquarium, and it depends on which variety it was and where it was caught. Now, when you buy here in town, there's no label. So there's no way of knowing. It could be okay.
Yeah.
It could not be.
So this is, as far as you're concerned here in central Iowa, this is mostly found at an Asian market.
I haven't seen them anywhere else. Okay. Have you ever seen them anywhere else?
I didn't know there was something like this to look for, so I will look now.
Yeah. I mean, it's a real treat.
Oh, how nice. And you say it is enjoyed in a lot of countries? You said France, and they use them too?
Yeah, it's not just Asian. It is in both the Atlantic and the Pacific. And it's not particularly tropical.
Mm-hmm.
So more, you know, mid-latitudes. And it's, you know, it's very, very delicious.
It certainly is.
And it's easy to prepare.
Cooking any fish, you kind of have to get over this first, what do I do? What do I do with this fish?
That's us Midwesterners, you know. We did not grow up with this stuff.
Treat it gently but firmly and hit the pan, and they cook relatively quickly. Yeah.
Well, since I really don't know the origin of it, I probably won't be eating it every day. Although, I think the next time I go back there, I might ask if they have any information about where it's coming from. I'm not expecting anything. But
you can always ask.
Yeah. And as I said, there's nothing on the package at all. You have to know what you're looking at.
Does the package say skate wing?
No.
Oh, figures.
It's a plastic. It's a double plastic bag with the little wing inside of it.
So you ask or look for the little wing.
Yeah, you have to look in. They have a frozen fish case. And there is a little sign with, it says skate. And then also whatever I don't know if it's Korean even, or whatever the Asian name of it is. And it's right there in a shelf below the mackerel and next to the squid pieces and things like that.
So here's all this frozen seafood that finds its way to Iowa.
Yes, and since it's frozen, it's very fresh. You know, if you were in, say, a fish market in New York that had unfrozen skate, you would definitely want to smell it because it does get a little bit ammonia flavored and you don't want to eat that. So this frozen one is, it's none of that. It's really good.
Very good.
Really, really good.
A recommendation to look in those freezers.
Skate wings.
Skate wings. Oh, somehow it doesn't sound like food. Skate wings. Very good. It looks like food, however. It looks beautiful, and it is delicious.
And it does. It has such a pleasant, not terribly fishy flavor.
Nope. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. There's something else that you found in this magazine.
Oh, yeah. We're back to the Savour magazine, which I would describe it as sort of, you know how we talked about how Anthony Bourdain covered a lot of cultural aspects of food? So it's kind of and I've been reading this magazine for probably 20 years on and off. It goes to all kinds of cultural places all over the world. So it's kind of like it's, you know, you don't get the story so much that Anthony Bourdain used to do, although they do still tell a lot of traditional stories. But it's sort of like the kind of information that he gave in a Better Homes and Gardens format. Lots of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots
and
of pictures
out where and a map. Our food comes from, huh?
One of the other stories in there was family-produced fish sauce from Vietnam. So fish sauce is, or nac mam, is the fermented mother sauce of Vietnam. And I mean, I keep a jar of it in my cupboard because it's kind of a central ingredient if you're doing any Southeast Asian foods.
I have some too, and it sits there for years because
it can.
It's because you use just a tiny little
bit.
It's
salt. It's salty. So, the story is about a young man who was raised in this country, and then he went back to Vietnam, and he saw many Vietnamese families traditionally making their own, salting and fermenting wild-caught black anchovies. And when he tasted the real traditional one, he was so impressed. And I think the story was he took some back to his mother, who just cried because it tasted like home.
Well, then you know.
And he's going, so why don't we have this quality available in the U.S.? So he returned in 2005, and he visited a friend's fish sauce operation. He smuggled the bottle back to his mother, right? And he said nobody at the time was exporting the high-quality Vietnamese product like this to America. So he did what any dutiful son would do. He left his lucrative Silicon Valley job to buy his friend's barrel house and launched what would ultimately become the most widely known fish sauce brand in America. It is called Red Boat. And it is, it's even on the jar, it says first press 100% pure. So it's made with only two ingredients, black anchovy and sea salt. It does not have water, MSG, or preservatives.
Oh.
So I found it on Amazon, not terribly expensive, and Lana is going to taste it for you. I should have brought the conventional one that I also have because, of course, I did a taste test too.
Well, usually fish sauce you think of is this black viscous stuff.
Right.
This is clear.
Yep. And what do you think of the flavor?
Oh, it's lovely salty anchovy. It's not killer strong. It's just really good.
No, it's really, really nice. You're going to have to get a bottle too. It's called Red Boat Fish Sauce. And I found it by reading the current issue of Savour magazine. You can order it. I think I ordered the two bottle packet on Amazon. Yeah. And here's the thing about fish sauce. You don't have to just save it for your Asian food. Since it's really anchovies and salt, it goes well with any kinds of Mediterranean foods. Like if you're making a a good red sauce for your pasta, instead of putting salt, use a little of the fish sauce because it gives the salt. Plus, it doesn't come out tasting like fish. It just goes, there's this, here we go with this word, umami flavor that anchovies are famous for. And it really does, it blends in beautifully. You can use it in a lot of different recipes where, you know, obviously you reduce the salt when you use this because it is like salt. But I keep it right next to my stove because it doesn't have to be refrigerated and it has a long shelf life. And it has many, many more uses than just the traditional Asian. So that's Red Boat fish sauce. Do try it. I looked around town and I was unable to find it in Ames. Of course, if anybody finds it in Ames, give us a call and tell us and we will direct you there. But it's easy peasy on Amazon. So
very good.
There we go.
So there are some flavors from the sea. Yes, we can have seafood here, and it's good to explore new things. Closer to home, in the rest of the show, we're going to be considering some summer fruit and summer berries. There are lots of things going on here.
Oh, yes. It's berry season.
Oh, yes. And even just wild caught berries or wild harvested berries. There's black raspberries. There's wild plums are coming soon. Wild gooseberries are coming soon. Mulberries are so lovely. Wild black cherries. And we'll be talking about a thing called June berries or service berries. Right now, I want to remind you that you are listening to KHOI Community Radio, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're going to be talking about summer fruit here. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Alice McGarry is a farmer. She's got a farm north of Ames called Mustard Seed Farm. And I found in her field some Juneberries, service berries. I've got a Juneberry tree, too, but hers were out in the sunshine, and hers were doing great.
They are quite large.
And so I went home and picked mine because, they're ready. Now, Juneberries are a lovely thing to harvest this time of year.
They're also called service berries, right?
Yep, or shad berries.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. They're often
it's enough to
planted.
Confuse you, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Enough. They are often planted as a ornamental. They're a lovely little sort of understory tree. They've got kind of an apple sort
the
of
birds
leaf.
Like them.
The birds, they're just a lovely tree. And they don't make a mess or anything, you know. So people like them in their yards.
The rabbits
but
like
this
them.
Time of year, check yourself out a Juneberry tree. And you may even find one just along the parking on the street someplace.
They look kind of like blueberries growing on a much taller tree, bush.
Yeah, that's true. They look like blueberries.
Kind of.
Here's a little something that Yul Gibbons says about Juneberries. Most people who have made the acquaintance of the Juneberry need no instruction on how to use the fruit, but merely stand by the bush or tree and stuff themselves. Yes, the dark red, almost purplish berries are a fine fruit to eat out of hand, and 10 soft seeds in each berry add rather than detract from their flavors. These same seeds get even softer when the berry is cooked and contribute much to the flavor of the finished product. So
have you cooked them?
No, I always just eat them. My favorite way to eat them is to put them on some really nice, melty vanilla ice cream. There's something, the berries have just a little bit of a crunch, not really a hard seed, so they've got a little texture to them. And with
they're milder in flavor than say a blueberry
yeah.
or
mm-hmm.
But they're nice.
Yeah. I noticed as I was picking, my dog really liked them.
You're kidding.
No. Well animals animals like things that fall out of the trees. So lots of things lots of different fruit.
I talked to Judy Henry out at the Berry Patch Farm, checking on what was going on out there, and got the report from her. Now, I have to say, you know, it's a U pick, and it's kind of south of Nevada. And Judy used to run a preschool. So the whole U pick, which also has lots of apple trees, is really geared for family fun. So if you've got youngins and you want them to realize that, you know, fruit grows on plants,
fruit comes from trees.
Do take them out for a little U pick. So Judy said right now the cherries, she's got lots and lots of cherries. She talked about somebody coming out, the husband and wife team picked 75 pounds of cherries. Can you imagine?
Oh, for goodness.
Yeah. And now, of course, they're going to have to pit them. So,
well, we are going to deal with that issue a little later in the show.
Yes. So Judy said cherries, and it's the pie cherries, what are they called? Montmorency or something like that? They're just beautiful this year. She said the strawberries have basically come and gone. There are a few left that you can, you know, search through the patch and see if you can find enough. The blueberries are coming on.
Oh, I love blueberries.
And they have great blueberries out there. The raspberries are coming on.
Gooseberries?
Her gooseberries are not ready yet, but they will be shortly. And then, of course, eventually she also has black and red currants. She said the red are just maybe starting a little bit, but the black are not ready yet.
Oh, just all this stuff grows on trees and bushes. It's so good. Oh, I want to report that gooseberries at the Ames Farmers Market, there was quite a showing of gooseberries. A number of different vendors had them, and they were selling them by the little...
I got to go get some. You know, gooseberries, you know, you have to pick the little thing off the end.
Yeah, they have a little tail.
After that, they're really easy to freeze, and they make wonderful, make a little gooseberry chutney to set off that goose later, you know?
Ah.
It's really good for putting with poultry during the winter seasons.
Ah, good. Well, we're going to consider more berry things here. You mentioned cherries. Cherries. From our archives, here's a little segment on cherry pie. Oh, I do like a good cherry pie.
Oh, yes.
One of the favorite tastes of summer is cherries, and they have
life is just a bowl of cherries.
It is a cherry-bowl-y.
I don't know where that came from, but we can really appreciate it this year. This is a great cherry year. We may have screwed up with the strawberries, but the cherries are coming on strong.
Oh yes, there's all kinds of different cherries, and ones that grow really well here in Iowa, in the Midwest, are the more sour kind, the pie cherries, we like to call them.
I have a personal rant about the cherries of the last 20 or 30 or 40 years. When I was a kid, mostly we had pie cherries, right, which I love. Mm-hmm. But then came the great amount of Bings and Queen Anne's, and you know, if you go to the grocery store now to buy cherries, you will not find the real cherries.
That's true.
You cannot really buy tart cherries in the store.
The sweet ones are the ones that have taken over.
That's all you can. I mean, and I'm not saying I don't like sweet cherries, but and I have a tree, and anybody who has room for a tree in Iowa should have a sour cherry tree.
Yes.
Or a pie cherry.
Let's call it a pie cherry. We've got a tree called North Star, and probably a lot of you have a North Star or something similar in the backyard. They are a cherry that has sort of, when it ripens, it's red on the inside. There's others, like the Montmorency, that also ripen and taste lovely, but they're kind of goldish, golden on the inside.
And they're still the tart kind,
Very tart, very
tart. So this North Star is kind of what I would call the classic, right?
It makes a really pretty pie. One of the tricky things about having a cherry tree is to beat the chipmunks and birds it.
Oh, yeah.
We had such a bountiful harvest this week, and it's still going on, that I think we came out about even. I mean, I think maybe all the folks, all the little winged ones and the woodland folks have got their fill, and we have too. I see little chipmunks going around with little fat cheeks, but we've got plenty. We've got plenty. I let my husband loves to do fuss with the cherry trees, climbing the ladders and getting the pits out. And
aren't you lucky?
Yeah, I am. It's good. It's good. What's my favorite things that you like to do with cherries?
Well, the lazy person's thing to do with cherries, which I've been doing this week, is because I have a very young tree and I don't get much off of it, but you just put them in a canning jar, and you pour brandy over them. And you screw that. You fill it up to the top. You screw the lid on, and you let it sit in the pantry. And they're great for Christmas. I mean, a couple of months is enough, but you don't have to pit them. So I put, instead of just straight brandy, I actually put B&B, which is Benedictine in brandy, which is slightly, well, let's say it's a little more velvety. It's got a little sweetener. It's more viscous, and OMG, when those are ready, you know, like you might drop a couple in a beverage, a cold beverage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even a glass of seltzer water with a spritz of lemon in it, and you drop a couple cherries in it, or a cocktail, of course. That's the lazy person's.
Yes, it's not version. Too early to think about Christmas and those toddies and those little cordials.
And you leave the pit in because actually it flavors it as well.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, I made a pie this weekend just because pies are good, and I do like cherry pies. I use the Joy of Cooking pie recipe, and I have to force myself to follow recipes because I tend to make things up. And pies, you want to at least make sure that the fruit sets and doesn't run all over the place. So I actually measured this. Also,
what do they call for? Tapioca or cornstarch or flour?
They recommended either tapioca or cornstarch. I didn't have enough tapioca, so I used cornstarch.
Mm-hmm.
And letting the cornstarch and a little bit of sugar set on the fruit for a good 15 minutes. So it all gets soaked in.
And a good trick is to mix the cornstarch and the sugar first.
Yes.
Because that breaks up the lumps and disperses it more evenly.
That's good. Oh, also, another thing to add, according to the Joy of Cooking, a couple drops of almond extract.
Yes, that is is absolute classic.
Almond extracts.
Not too much.
No.
You don't want to eat the pie and go, oh, this has almond extract in it. It's just enough to blend in with the cherry flavor.
It's a good combination. The cherry pie didn't last too long. It went real quick, so it must have been a big hit.
What would you make the crust out of?
Half spelt flour, half whole wheat flour, and half lard and half butter.
Ooh, lard and butter. Ooh.
I would have made it all lard, but I didn't take out enough out of the freezer. And we can't go wrong with butter. Oh, Donna, I wanted to ask you, too, another thing about that cherry pie recipe, and I find this in other fruit recipes. It always says, before you put the crust on the top, dot with butter. You're supposed to dot the fruit that you've poured into the crust. Why dot with butter?
Oh, there's no reason except for the richness of the flavor. Fruits, of course, have no fats in them, and then the fat that you put in the crust, you know, stays emulsified in the grain. So it doesn't really go into the fruit mixture. So if you put the butter on the top as it thickens, you know, the juices cook with the cornstarch or the whatever, the butter melts into it and becomes part of the runny part of the pie. That's
the runny
really
bits, yeah.
That's the best. So as my mother would say, it's like throwing in the tail with the hide.
Oh, okay.
Just add it in because why not?
I always do. I mean, what? I just add more butter. Okay. I was thinking maybe there was a chemical thing that had.
No, it's a taste. I mean, okay, fat, any kind of fat, mm-hmm. is a, quote, flavor carrier.
Aha. Uh-huh.
When you get down to the chemistry of it, they will kind of claim that fat itself does not have a flavor.
Mm.
I mean, obviously the olive oil flavor comes from some element in the olive that goes into the oil. The butter flavor comes from like the little bits of the milk particles that are still in the butter. So flavor, all oil, any oil is actually a flavor carrier. So it just kind of like, it's like why you put a tiny, tiny little bit of salt into something that's sweet, because it just kind of goes ding with the flavor. Just ups that volume of the flavor a tiny little bit. Cherries have basically come and gone. There are a few left that you can, you know, search through the patch and see if you can find enough. The blueberries are coming on.
Oh, I love blueberries.
And they have great blueberries out there. The raspberries are coming on.
Gooseberries?
Her gooseberries are not ready yet, but they will be shortly. And then, of course, eventually she also has black and red currants. She said the red are just maybe starting a little bit, but the black are not ready yet.
Oh, just all this stuff grows on trees and bushes. It's so good. Oh, I want to report that gooseberries at the Ames Farmers Market, there was quite a showing of gooseberries. A number of different vendors had them, and they were selling them by the little...
I got to go get some. Yeah. Because, you know, gooseberries, you know, you have to pick the little thing off the end.
Yeah, they have a little tail.
After that, they're really easy to freeze, and they make wonderful, make a little gooseberry chutney to set off that goose later, you know?
Ah.
It's really good for putting with poultry during the winter seasons.
Ah, good. Yes.
Well, while we're figuring it out, let's talk about upcoming events.
Oh, very good. Well, next week, can you believe it already? It is going to be the 4th of July.
Oh, wow. June is done. Right. We passed the solstice, and here we go.
Oh, for goodness sakes. And KHOI, as usual, there's kind of a nice tradition here. KHOI will be in the Ames
Parade
with the brand new mural.
And we're not throwing candy, okay?
No. We're just going to be waving and being nice to people.
Are we going to be in the parade this year, Lana?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. I better prepare myself.
There is always some people there glad to see us.
So, yes.
So.
And there's another event coming up at the ISU library, which I'm going to try to attend. This kind of looks very interesting.
On July 18th. There is going to be a new exhibit opening at the ISU Library
Archives.
This is
not the downtown library. This is the on-campus library.
Called Activist Agriculture, Farm Protest in Iowa, 1929 through 1969. Oh, that'll be good. I think
Farm Protest.
Fun.
So it's a historical review of what farmers have had to do in order to make their voices heard.
Right.
And obviously we could use some more of that these days, right?
So, Activist Agriculture, Farm Protest in Iowa. Activist agriculture, that is not an oxymoron. Really, truly, there are times when farmers have come up and made their voices known, and this is an exhibition about
that.
Yeah,
because, you know, they're running things from the business perspective in Washington, D.C., but who knows the farmer's business better than the farmers?
Especially in the times that we are in now. So let's think about those selling of commodities and selling of food to people. Thanks to the archivists and historians at the ISU Library for helping us to remember there is a long history of rural and agriculture activism, and that farmers' struggle for autonomy, for agribusiness exploitation, is an ongoing story. We'll mention that again because that's going to be the 15th of July. Yes, it
right.
is.
Right. You got a couple weeks' notice there. Plus, I think it's an ongoing exhibit, but during the morning of the 15th, the curators will be there to answer questions.
Oh, very good. Yeah. Very good. Cherry pie. It is the season. And there's other things to make pies out of, too. So all these berry
all
pies.
All the berries are coming, yep.
Gooseberry pie. Oh, a gooseberry pie would probably need some thickening to it, too. Make it the same.
Yeah, almost all the berry pies do. Mm-hmm. cobblers will thicken on their own because of the kind of the biscuity dough, because flour is another thickener that some people use instead of cornstarch or tapioca. So you've got options. Now, the thing about pitting the cherries, that's a bit tedious. And I can always remember, like, my grandmother, and I'm sure many women of her generation, when she reached the point where she was, like, sitting around in a rocking chair most of the time, always had a pan and a paring knife in her hand. So she was always either, you know, cutting the beans up or pitting the cherries. It is work that, you know, it's handwork. Or there are various devices which still are basically handwork. The one thing that I like to do is not pit the cherries.
Oh.
If you put them in a canning jar, like a quart jar, cover them up with brandy or Benedictine in brandy and wait a few months, you can just, you know, kind of pick them out. And then each person is responsible for pitting their own cherry at the dinner table.
And they're soaked up in brandy.
Yes, and they're really yummy. And the brandy is really yummy.
And the brandy's really yummy. It's a good thing, especially when Christmas is coming around. Yes, it is. Good. All right. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. To the Donalana Kitchen. So, you got your cherries, I got all your fruit, and we mentioned having to deal with all those pits. You mentioned somebody pick what, 50 quarts of?
75, Judy told me.
Oh my gosh. Now, that turns
And of course, they're perishable, so right, you can't like do a few tonight and next night over a, you know, 3-week period, you've got to deal with them.
Help. So, how do we make these little cherries available for our stomachs without the pits?
Well, there's the old method, the paperclip method.
Oh.
Really tedious. That's a one-at-a-time deal. There's another method, I believe, where you take a soda straw and poke it to get the pit out. Have you ever seen that one, too?
I've seen that done. Now, talk about tedious.
Yeah.
One takes a bottle. A beer bottle, probably.
Oh, that's right.
And put balance that cherry right on top of the beer bottle, and then you poke it with a straw. Now, theoretically, and usually, that's okay. The pit goes right through into the bottle, and the cherry falls to the outside as you put the bottle in a dish.
This sounds like something if you had a neighborhood full of kids, you could invite them over and give a prize for who pits the most, right?
And you'd send the kids home really sticky. But that's okay. That does work. It does work. And actually, it's a little less. The paperclip method, the cherry's in your hand, and you get kind of sticky yourself.
Runs down your elbow,
But for many years, I've spent all sorts of
gadgets.
Rube Goldberg gadgets.
I got some gadgets.
Oh,
well,
what?
There's the traditional one that's it's still one at a time, but it's also called an olive pitter. So you can easily get those, but it's still one at a time. So, of course, I go to the Colo auction, and occasionally there's some bit of culinary equipment there from, you know, when people had to pit their own cherries, and I have a few examples of them. They're various things made out of kind of pot metal that clamp to the table. They have a crank. They have a little kind of like a concave place where you put maybe 10 or 15 cherries, and then it has a little trough and it lines it up and it shoots it through the poker. So you do the crank and it's supposed to get the pit in one thing and then the cherry's supposed to roll out the other side. But they're pretty messy.
Yeah.
Whenever I do them, I end up with juice all over the place. And, you know, it's complicated. Then there are the more modern ones, which are kind of plexiglass boxes that have a, what is it, like a spring-loaded thing that you kind of punch up and down and you load it and they roll through pretty fast. Those you can actually go to like Cook's Emporium and buy those, I think, right here.
I was kind of in search of one of those and last year, as a matter of fact, and I did go to the local Emporium, yes, and I found one there. There is a brand called Victorio, and they make a lot of nice gadgets, yes.
Yeah, oh, they also make the Italian tomato cedar kind of thing, yes, I think. Right.
Now, compared to everything I've tried, and I've tried those little, the metal crank ones before, this plastic one does do a little better job of keeping the gush sort of controlled. Very good. And the little spring arm on the thing, you can move right along. It's got a little
whack, whack, whack.
And the little container rolls the cherries down one at a time. Actually, it was pretty good. This year, our cherries went through a couple of bouts of hail. I had to actually throw quite a few of them away because some of them were damaged and kind of funny looking. But. It seems to deal with all sorts of sizes and all sorts of kinds of cherries. It seemed to be just fine, although I'm sure the stuff the other people have probably had better luck with nice big cherries this year. I kind of had funny-looking little cherries.
Well, you know, the pie sour cherries are never huge.
That's true. Worth every penny, though. They're quite lovely. They are good. And actually, I had a container of cherries, and I looked at them, and I thought, I don't want to pit them. And I had already done your wonderful thing of putting
the
some
brandy
by for Christmas.
Okay.
So I have some left. So I just kind of cooked them down for juice, which is not a bad thing. Oh dear, you all cook them down, but then cook them down till they're absolute mush and just let them drip, and you've got really nice cherry juice.
Oh, I bet you could make cherry jelly out of
one could. Or I've just been kind of adding into some soda water with a little shot of lemon, and that's good too. Cherry. Oh, and I like that sort of thing. Little jars of that sort of thing in the refrigerator. They go into smoothies really nicely too. Just kind of a little slosh of stuff. Yes.
Cherry is good.
Yeah. I saw a recipe in a local newspaper. There's a farmer's magazine that comes out once a week called, Farm News for Central Iowa. And they have a cooking section. They had a recipe for elderberry pie. Now, I think that'd be terribly seedy, but some people, I've had blackberry pie too, and I don't know. Way too seedy for me.
Well, but also elderberries.
I mean, you have to put in a lot of lemon.
Oh, okay. It does require, because I've made elderberry cordial, not the alcohol, to add to alcohol, let's say. Mm-hmm. But it always requires some more acidic fruit, like even a blueberry or something.
Oh, yes.
So what did they put in the pie?
Just elderberries.
Because elderberry, really?
And lemon, yeah.
Okay, because elderberries straight, they get a little metallic-y flavored kind.
They do. They always taste so good for you.
Yes, they are good for you.
There you go.
It's good for a cold is what they say. Like when you if you go to the health food store and you look in the cold remedy thing, there's something called, it's a brand name called Sambucol. All that is elderberry syrup.
Yes. I don't know if it works, but it makes you feel better taking it. So
it doesn't hurt. It's apparently an immune system booster.
So we've got all of these wonderful berries this time of year. Oh, cherries and berries. I like raspberries. I have a patch that is just kind of, I planted a couple years ago, and I've got red raspberries coming. They're not ready yet, but the plants are looking really nice, really nice, despite the fact that a deer got in and ate a few. But that was okay.
Really? They like them?
Oh.
With the thorns and everything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They nibble off the tops, of course.
Oh.
But they left plenty. They left plenty for us. But around our farm, and actually in road ditches and around woods, on the edges of things, you find wild black raspberries. No, not blackberries. They're black raspberries. And they are the kind that just grow without any tending by anybody. I like that, those kind of fruit.
What about the Iowa plums? Now, I have never been able to actually find any and eat them.
Ah, they're good. They're small.
Mm-hmm.
They're small.
Probably very tart, right?
They're very tart, but they're very good. I like them. I like them very much.
Do you make a jam out of them? What do you do with them?
I like making a jam out of plums called Plum Crazy.
Oh, you're using wild plums for those?
What I call Plum Crazy is when the wild plums are coming, are here, usually there is a real glut of plums, pluots, plums and pluots in the store. Now, those are the big, gushy, wonderful ones, and I like to mix those two.
Right, because sometimes the cultivated ones are not as flavorful.
Oh, they're not. They're not, and it's really nice to have. Again, they're smaller, and the trees that I have, the wild plums are golden with a red blush.
Ooh.
Yeah, they are. I've
in the spring, you can easily spot them because they bloom. Like if you're walking in the woods, you'll see them, and they're very obvious. But somehow is it harvest time for them now? Are they
not yet.
Not
they're,
yet.
They're
okay,
green.
We're
they're
still
green. Very greenish.
Oh, goody. Well, pick me one to try.
Yeah. I'll bring you some in. It's a while yet before I get some. And
yeah, and we don't have them. Lots of, I mean, plum orchards don't do that well in Iowa.
No,
there's not
no.
a lot of them around.
I have tried growing some domestic plums. Not that I'm a great orchardist, and I have had zero luck with domestic plums. So
it's just a little too cold, I guess.
Or something. Yeah. They just don't like what I got over there. So I get them some from the grocery store, and I mix them with wild plums, and there you have some really good jam coming.
By the way, I've been trying the early peaches at the grocery stores, mostly
and?
Coming. Nothing yet.
Okay.
So far, every time I buy, I just buy one or two, and I take them home, and I let them get ripe, because, of course, they're not ripe. And so far, I haven't found any that I go running back to buy more.
Well, so,
but we're still, the cling peaches have not come in yet. I mean, I know we're in peach territory. I've seen South Carolina peaches. I've seen, of course, California peaches. But they're not good yet.
That's something we in the Midwest, and I suppose other parts of the country too. You talk about the weather, of course, and you might talk about the local sports team or talk about the World Cup soccer or whatever. But you always check in with somebody about, are the peaches ripe yet?
Yeah. No, and I also wanted to mention, I have been disappointed in the watermelons so far.
Oh,
we do not, of course, have local ones yet. So these are all coming in from south somewhere. And they've not been very good.
Huh.
However, I did have, and I think I got it at the Hy-Vee, some local Athena cantaloupes.
Ah.
And those were good.
Oh. Are those a yellow fleshed, a green fleshed?
Yeah, orange.
Oh, orange.
Orangish. And they're a reasonable price, and they were good. So I would recommend those. I bought two so far, and I'm going back for more.
Good. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen by going to khoifm.org. We've got archives there. We talked about summer fruit today, and Donna talked about seafood. Yes.
Seafood, yes.
Seafood, S-E-A.
Here in the middle of Iowa.
Yeah, try something new. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're on the air Tuesdays at noon. We're repeated Tuesdays at 7. We'll go out with a fine Scottish jig by Elka Baker, Liz Donaldson, and Ralph Gordon. They belong to a group called Tripsickery. They play lovely, lovely Scottish dance music. Support this fine radio station. Thanks for joining us today. My name's Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Engineering by Colin Bursack. Eat good food and enjoy life.